Oh, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Get on with it.
Toppy.
It's Bergkamp.
Hashtag fuck Ennis.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and out.
We're done. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to A Bergkamp Wonderland. I'm Simon Collins. I'll be your host for this evening. I'm joined by two excellent guests, as always. First, it is the Goonaholic, Dave. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thanks, Simon. I'm lying, of course. I've been better, but we'll be all right for the night.
Yeah,
sorry about the voice, everybody, because it's a bit croaky.
I see you've been getting lots of support and well wishes on Twitter, so
yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure I take it for everyone when we say I hope you get on the mend soon anyway.
Thank you very much. No, people have been great.
And our second guest for this evening is Josh. Josh, how are we doing?
It's all good. I'm taking a night off and watching Bake Off. So, it's the sacrifices you have to make for the Arsenal and for ABW as well.
I know you and me are probably the two biggest Bake Off fans in the whole of ABW, and we're both missing it and putting it on record. That's our commitment to the show. Right, we're going to start with a look back at last night's game, the Manchester United match. A 1-1 draw in the end. Dave, we'll go to you first because I want to get your feelings on the result at the end compared to how you felt going into the match, because looking through Twitter and speaking to people afterwards, they were pretty disappointed with a point, which, you know, in the past, a point at Old Trafford, we'd be happy with. What was your feelings about it?
Yeah, I'd had a little punt beforehand. I felt quite confident that we would win it. And I actually had the most outrageous stroke of good fortune, because when we got back to 1-1, I thought, that's it. We are going to get my 2-1 win. So I went to have a look just to see what cash back was going to be, or cash out. And lo and behold, there's this button that says cash out. I thought, well, that'll tell me. And I hit it. And inadvertently, I made a £16 profit on the evening. So that was kind of a result. The performance, I don't think anyone's going to rave about it. Although when we break it down, I think there are component parts of the game that were better than others and where we probably did better than we thought we might. There are obviously other moments. I think at 1-1, they were there for the taking and we just didn't have that final killer ball, if you like. But if you'd asked me at the start of the game what I wanted to win, if you said to me at the end of the game, you've got a point apiece, you're in the top four, I'd have taken it, quite frankly.
Yeah, and Josh, what about you? Because I think when we went 1-0 down, I don't know about you, but I sort of had that fear. It's a classic sort of, you know, away from home. Those are the games where we sort of capitulate. So I took a bit of positive in that, the fact that we came back, got the goal in, you know, circumstances that I think were, for once, people were happy about VAR. But what was your assessment of it, Josh?
I thought going into the game, to be honest, United play, and I know this sounds like throwing stones in glass houses, but they play terrible football. So I could only really expect a terrible game as a result. You know, if you've got even one team in the scenario that doesn't play good football, chances are the game's going to be bad. So coming into it, perhaps a bit pessimistic, but we have an awful record at Old Trafford. Absolutely awful. So it's one of those that even doesn't matter who's in the dugout, we've always seemed to struggle there. And it was one of those before the game, everything was looking like it was going to be, you know, come up Arsenal, which is always generally a sign that it's not going to. You know, I mean, so many positives that come up. Maybe it's just the glass half empty nature of us as fans. But as soon as McTominay put that goal in, it was almost like a, yeah, course, knew it, that's it. 1-0, Old Trafford, scrappy goal by a player who hasn't scored in a year for them. It had the kind of writing on the wall from that. And to see Aubameyang again kind of pull us by the short and curlies out of trouble with a superb finish. And I'm sure we'll get onto the linesman, but generally with that kind of result, yeah, I can see why the pelters are coming at Emery. And to be honest, I would say the lady's not for turning, but in this occasion, I think I might slowly be turning.
Yeah, Let's stick on Emery just for a minute, guys, in terms of what we, you know, think of him at this point in time. He's had over a year. He's into his second season. For me, the issue when I watch an Arsenal team under Emery is that I think Tim Stillman actually made the point on Twitter after the Aston Villa game, and it was a great point, I think. He basically described it as a basketball match. You know, Arsenal are never really in control of these games. It's chaotic. It's end-to-end. And for me, when I compare us to, you know, Manchester City and Liverpool, who are the benchmark in the Premier League, you know, you watch them play games and they're constantly in control of the match. Very rarely are they not in control of proceedings. And for us, we just don't have any control. And I'm struggling to see what Emery's trying to do. Is he trying to play a counter-attacking system where, you know, we soak up pressure and we hit teams on the break, which is fair enough, but I don't think we've got a defence who can soak up pressure. So, I mean, Dave, what's your assessment of Emery and where he's at, and whether you think you can see the bigger picture of what he's trying to do with Arsenal?
No, I most certainly can't, but I think it's very easy to make generalisations along the lines. And there's kind of this lynch mob building up against him. And I understand totally why, but I'd prefer to take some specifics about the guy. And the very first one last night is team selection. To leave out a creative midfield player to bring in Torreira alongside Xhaka and Guendouzi. I find odd his selection of Torreira these days as a box-to-box player, because we signed him as a defensive midfielder. He was very good at Sampdoria and for Uruguay in that role. When he first started playing for us, he sat in front of that back four like a little bulldog, really. He did the job he was signed to do. Last night, I don't get what he was being asked to do. And if you have a look in the first start of the second half, the first opportunity falls to him in the box. He hasn't got the finishing ability, unfortunately. And so he immediately hooked him and put on Ceballos, who probably should have started ahead of him if he wasn't going to be used as a defensive midfielder. And he seems to be hanging his hat on Xhaka as that defensive midfielder, when Xhaka should be the box-to-box player and get him out of the way because he's a liability at the back. So specifics like that I'm struggling with. And so I understand what people are generalising about, but I'm nervous that he'll survive the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, where do you stand, Josh? Because there's another school of thought that says you've got to give Emery time. You know, look at Manchester United last night. I mean, this is a team that Sir Alex Ferguson left in 2013, and, you know, they're below us in the table. They spent £800 million. So, in some sense, you know, you've got to give Emery a bit of credit, because the ship has, to a degree, it's steady. It's where Wenger was. It's just outside the top four, in the top four place as it stands. So are you, Josh, thinking, you know, you've got to give Emery a bit more time, or are you one of those who are starting to think, okay, maybe this isn't quite going to work out?
I think the squad that we were left with by Wenger was a different squad that Fergie left United. I think Fergie had basically left that squad on empty when he handed it over to David Moyes. There's a little bit more about that squad that we'd left, or that Wenger had left to Emery, which means that perhaps we should have seen it push on and really move forward with it. And we've not necessarily seen that. We've got better in certain aspects of the game, but you can't ignore where we've regressed. You know, the football isn't as dynamic, isn't as, you know, attackingly minded as we saw under Wenger. Now, we can't say that, you know, what would happen if Wenger was in for another season. Would we concede even more? We had to put a stop to that kind of drop, and we have, as you say, plateaued under Emery. I think there's an expectation that we would have got better and really pushed up the league. I think this season is really, really key for us because of the changes at United and at Chelsea. You can see even early on, Leicester are the team that are capitalising on everybody else being woefully out of form. Even Spurs at the moment. you know, are below Leicester, who have really, as I say, capitalised on that, on our poor form, really. But in terms of getting rid of him early, the only thing I would say is we're coming up to what, a similar point of the season when David Moyes was let go of Man United. And I think that starting that instability is just something that's very hard to stop. And you can see how they've churned through managers. If we can get the man who we want and they're available, if we're still in and around similar positions, you know, still outside the top four, you know, fifth or sixth, and we're getting to the last stages of the Europa League, then I would be happy to keep Emery in place, because you don't know what could happen. You know, it's a single game at the end of the season. We could get Champions League again. If we've got the man in place to take over from him, then I'd be completely happy with leaving him as our manager for the rest of the season.
Yeah, for me, I'm in the camp where he obviously signed that contract, which was 3 years with a break clause at the end of this season. For me, it's pretty simple. If he makes Champions League top four, keep your job, whether that's by Europa League or finish top four. If he doesn't, I think personally, it's time to get rid. I think, you know, 2 seasons to get back in the Champions League with that squad, with the level of investment he's had this summer. You know, I think that's fair enough. I mean, what would you guys say to that, Dave? Would you think that's a fair assessment?
Yes, I pretty much do. The only thing I would say about the amount of money he's had to spend in the summer is it looks as though it may take Pepe a year to adjust to the Premier League. And he is a key part of finishing top four, I think. But he's finding the language difficult, I understand. He's obviously finding the fact that he's played three of what is likely to be the top six. So he knows the difficulty of facing the big sides. But I think it's also probably opened his eyes what's happened when we played Watford and what happened when we played Aston Villa. And he realises this is not the French league. You don't get easy walk-away games nearly every other week. Sorry about that, Chris, but it's the God's honest truth. And so that may have an effect on where we finish. But other than that, of course, he has the bonus of finding Bukayo Saka on the other side, who looks more than geared up to make up for Pepe while he finds his feet in the game. And let's be fair, we all know other great players have taken a year to settle in at the Arsenal. So, yeah, I pretty much agree with your assessment. Top four, keep him. If not, sorry, it's time to go.
Yeah. Would you think that even if we got top four, it's actually an opportunity for us to upgrade on the manager as well, as we'd be a more attractive prospect based on, you know, the things that the performances we've seen, that's kind of untangible parts of the game, you know, just the feel of an Emery side out there, David? Would you look at that as an opportunity? Put the feelers out?
Depended who was available. I mean, if all of a sudden Pep Guardiola says he fancies the Arsenal job, I'd snatch his arm off. But yeah, I don't know. I think if the guy gets his top four, he deserves his third year and see where it goes from there.
Mm. What do you think about Pepe, Josh? Because I must admit, he wasn't someone I saw masses of playing in France. I saw, you know, as everyone else did, perhaps the odd, you know, highlight reel. And he looked like a player, Josh, who was, you know, who was going to beat a man, who was going to take players on. And certainly for Arsenal, they haven't had that since, you know, Alexis Sanchez was perhaps the last player who could properly beat a man. And he hasn't really done it. He had flashes against Liverpool, he did it. You know, the odd time against Spurs, but we haven't really seen that. Do you think that's a confidence thing? Do you think that's him getting used to the pace of the Premier League? I mean, what's your assessment of him so far?
I think there's a couple of things with Pepe. I think one of the most worrying things from my point of view is he looks like he's in, well, like his confidence is either shot or he doesn't really, either he's not at the fitness level he'd want to be to really pull off the kind of moves that we saw him do last season. And the reason why we plucked to spend £72 million on him coming in is just how he overcomes that. You know, he's still young, relatively, you know, 24. This is possibly one of the biggest hurdles in his career. And it's really telling of a player how they kind of get through these hurdles. You see it, especially with like young centre-backs. You know, they can be absolutely amazing when they come through, like a John Stones, and then watch them make their first mistake. It's all about how they turn on that mistake, because once that big amount of confidence that they've built up across the last couple of seasons kind of drifts away and they have to rebuild themselves. I think the other thing we could also look at potentially is what he's being asked to do for the team versus what he was asked to do for Lille. At Lille, he was a bit more of a, you know, their direct outlet. Well, he's come into a team now where he's not the big fish. You've got the Aubameyangs in there, albeit, and I'm sure we'll get on to the missing German at the moment later in the show, but Mesut Ozil, another huge player in terms of reputation, didn't have those kind of names in the Lille dressing room with him. And I think it's just that kind of big change, everything happening at the same time. And then he's asked to go and perform against Liverpool and then going to ask to perform against Spurs in a huge derby for us. I think all of those things have added up to us seeing a rather frustrating player. I mean, I'd say the things I shouted when he missed that opportunity early in the first half, it was just so infuriating because you know the quality is there. And I think that's why we find him such a frustrating figure at the moment. And where, you know, if it was a young player like Sacco, we're more inclined to give him a bit of a benefit of the doubt. But because he's got that big price tag, there's a lot shorter limit on kind of our fuses in that regard.
Can I just make one further point on him, one final point on him, is that anybody who's been around the Arsenal dressing room knows there is a really good spirit in that squad, and particularly it emanates from the relationship between Aubameyang and Lacazette, and other players feed off that. Now, what I thought was interesting last night was that every time Pepe got the ball, he didn't look to find Aubameyang, who is his most obvious outlet. And I just wonder whether he feels a little bit of an outsider in there at the moment. So I'd like to think someone's going to put an arm around his shoulder, drag him into the group, and that'll make all the difference.
Yeah. Si, what have you heard from your kind of position in how he's integrated into the squad?
I mean, it was an interesting one because when he obviously joined late, you know, coming from the African Cup of Nations. And I think that is really difficult. I think people underestimate not having a pre-season, the impact it can have on a player. And I think you're right to point out his fitness as being a bit of an issue. I don't think he looks fully sharp as he would want to be. You know, I think a big thing is definitely going to be getting used to English football. I think there's a fantastic interview with Danny Sabars that Sid Lowe did that was in The Guardian a few weeks back. And Sabars was talking about that Liverpool game and saying how he was just blown away by the pace of it and the speed of it. And I get that feeling with Pepe. He's a bit like, wow, okay, this has gone up another level. And you'll have seen this week, he's done a few interviews in France. He did one with Canal Plus. He did one with RMC, the radio station. And in both of those, he spoke about how, you know, he admitted he's not played well enough so far. He's admitted he's got a big price tag, but he said, look, you know, patience, give me time, and he'll get there. And I think that's the feeling from everyone at Arsenal. I don't think there's any, you know, pressure on him to start performing now. I think there's an acceptance that it will take time, as we've seen with Arsenal players in the past, you know, Thierry Henry, Robert Pires, these guys all took time. And the key thing, I think, will be when we have Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe all together, because of Lacazette's injury, that's happened so rarely. I think that's going to need time to gel. But I think that relationship will happen. I mean, we saw, you know, how Aubameyang, Lacazette teased the announcement video, you know, on Instagram. They want him to be part of this setup. They want him to make the team better. And I think it's something where fans have just got to be patient and give it a bit of time. I know it's difficult when someone costs, you know, 80 million euros, but I really think if you give him time, he'll come good. And he's someone I would probably look to try and play on Thursday, I think, you know, in that Europa League game. I know that's normally a game for the youngsters, but he looks like someone who could do with, you know, I know he got that penalty, but a few goals, a good performance, and it could make a big difference. So that's where I sort of stand a bit. But as much as I was disappointed with him last time, I was really pleased with Bukayo Saka. I don't know what you guys thought of him. I think he's someone who was being in the shadow a bit of Reece Nelson, I think, when it comes to young Arsenal wingers coming through the academy. But Dave, what have you made of him and the impact he's had this season? Because he looks like someone who's playing with, you know, years ahead of his level. I mean, he's 18 years old, but the maturity of him's fantastic.
Absolutely. And just so impressed. He's been given an opportunity and he's absolutely grabbing it with both hands. You were talking about when Lacazette comes back. I'm not altogether sure that Saka doesn't keep his place and Pepe goes to just go and do some fitness work, returns to Europa League or Carabao Cup action, because Saka just looks the finished deal from day one. And you looked at him last night, and I believe I saw a stat. He made more tackles than anyone else on the pitch. He broke through. The only thing that I thought was odd was the number of times that both he and Aubameyang ended up on the left wing. So when he got through, he had nobody to cross it to. But generally, yes, you can't help but be impressed with the lad and the way he's played every time he's been out there. From, was it Frankfurt he came on first? Yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's got a huge future ahead.
Yeah. Josh, do you think he's overtaken Reece Nelson a bit in that pecking order for the left-hand slot? Because I think at the start of the season, everyone thought, yeah, that's Nelson's spot, you know, fantastic in Hoffenheim. But all of a sudden, it feels like Saka's got that left-hand spot just because as well he offers something so different. He's a natural left-footed winger, you know, who wants to get outside his man and get crossed into the box. Do you put him ahead of Nelson, Josh?
Yeah, I think in that regard, it depends what we want from our wingers. I think he offers something different because, as you say, he goes outside the man. And when we've got our idealistic three up top in, you know, Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe, everyone's cutting inside in that group. The same with Reece Nelson as well. So at Hoffenheim, he was kind of playing not right wing, more like a right centre forward or right sided forward. He was a little narrower than your kind of traditional winger. And I think that's where his ultimate position would be, as someone that can cut in. You don't get that with Saka. And I think that's what makes him so good for us, is that want and ability to go on the outside as well. Perhaps it's the fact that, I don't know, I think we'll see with Nelson. And it's too early to say with, do we throw Reece Nelson overboard? Absolutely not. You know, these are young players. They're still going to flit in and out of games at some point. This is Saka's, you know, run of 10 that he'll have this season where he'll be absolutely fantastic. And you've got to hope Reece Nelson's there to pick up the pieces and we can rotate them out and keep them fresh.
Yeah, I think that the key as well is to, you know, not put too much pressure on these guys and not be, you know, playing them every single, you know, opportunity that we get. Because for someone like Saka, who's had a fantastic game against Frankfurt, he then starts against Villa, he then starts Old Trafford. As much as, you know, he could probably start against Liège and I'm sure he'd put a good performance, it's one of those where I think, you know, just rein him in a bit, keep them fresh and not play them too much would be my take on it.
Yeah, it's not like we don't have options on the wing. We've already said Reece Nelson's an available option. We've still got so many coming through the youth academy as well. It's like we've got a glut of wide players. If only we could produce a left back or a right back. But no, we've just got many, many wingers at the moment. And whilst we've got that option, it seems silly not to rotate. You know, we've also got Martinelli, who played down the middle against Nottingham Forest, but again, was an option on the left. So I think while we've got the option, it'd be silly not to rotate and make sure we keep these young guys fresh and hungry.
Yeah. We'll finish on United by talking about the Swiss-shaped elephant in the room that is Granit Xhaka. He came under a lot of stick before the game with the whole captaincy vote, which Rob Holding revealed after the Forest game, the players had a vote on it. He got given the captaincy partly on that vote and partly with Emery's input. And then obviously in the game at Old Trafford, he came under more fire when he appeared to duck out the way of Scott McTominay's shot. Dave, we'll come to you first. Firstly, just your views on the whole captaincy vote and Xhaka getting the armband, and then the whole debate around him ducking under the ball last night and what you made of it, whether it was a deflection or, you know, one of those things where, you know, I'm a lad sitting a 40-mile-an-hour shot towards your face. It's human instinct to get out of the way. What's your whole take on the Xhaka fury that's bubbling under the way at the moment?
Okay, well, the award of the captaincy, I'm not particularly fussed how it was done. I don't really care who decided that they wanted him as captain, in as much as it's kind of a ceremonial role these days. And if you have a look at the number of captains we have had who have been non-playing in recent seasons, that is no reason to keep him in the side regardless if he isn't worthy of a place. I thought last night, generally, for most of the game, he was reasonable, did a good job, helped out when I thought the defence for the first half hour were excellent. He was a little part of that. When it came to the goal, I must admit, I type these things up live, and like you, Simon, I hit the button at 90 minutes, and what I've written, I've written. And thankfully, I'd phrased it as a question. Did Xhaka duck out of that way? And I now, with the benefit of hindsight, no, I don't think he had a hope in hell of getting on that deflected effort. Whether he was trying to get out of the way of it is a moot point as a result. There was, however, the almost inevitable picking up of the fourth yellow card of the season. And he seemed to be chasing it. He seemed to want it. Now, this may provide an opportunity. His next booking, he gets a suspension. Then we'll see what we're like without him. Hopefully we'll produce a performance, and then Emery has a question to ask. Do we have another non-playing captain, or don't we? That's the key for me now.
Yeah, it felt like, as you say, Dave, that it was inevitable that Xhaka would pick up that yellow card. The sort of petulant fouls that he does, I mean, if you go back and look at them, you know, there was the one against Villa was, you know, a needless sort of shirt tug. The tackles that scream, you know, being out of position or being immobile, and that's something that you can't really have in the midfield of a Premier League team, in my opinion, Josh. I mean, what's your take on him and where you stand him? Do you think he should be in the first 11? Are you happy he's the captain? I mean, where are you standing, Josh?
Yeah, as David said, in terms of the captaincy, it's not for us to decide, is it? Who do we want to be the captain? It should be the players in the dressing room that ultimately make that decision, and the manager. And from the sounds of things, especially what Rob Holding has said and a couple of like the YouTube videos, it sounds like he has a similar role that Per did with his kind of captaincy. He's the guy with picking you up on the fines. He's doing all of the kind of nitty-gritty work and that, trying to keep the standards of Arsenal in place. And while he's great at that, absolutely he continues to do that, but he's not a bursar for us. Yeah, he should be more than that on the field. And he's really, as you say, it's difficult because he's been such a key component, not only under Emery, but under Wenger as well. And obviously both managers have seen something in him that perhaps we're not, because I think it was even a question under Wenger, why is Xhaka starting so many games? We can see his flaws and they're being highlighted every week. Is it the midfield around him that isn't strong enough? I think it's coming to a point now that we need to stop having this single point of failure in our sides. And we've had it for so many seasons with, before Xhaka, it was Santi. And we've got a lot of players that are very similar in that midfield. And I think taking Xhaka out as one of those unique players means we could be a bit more creative, you know, having a Guendouzi and Willock in there, or start playing Torreira in a position that he plays for country and did for club before he came to Arsenal, in that kind of defensive role, because you can see that the defence absolutely needs that solid midfield and they're just not getting it at the moment. And you'd be surprised, especially once our new fullbacks, they feel like new signings, one of them actually being a new signing, in Kieran Tierney, but him and Bellerin coming in, they're going to need a stable defensive base if they're going to be able to push forward and do what they do best, which is up at the final third of the pitch, to really support this side, especially looking at how Emery's tactics are, where the fullbacks are utilised to the most of their attacking ability. We're going to need something stable and consistent in that midfield. And whilst we've got something consistent in Xhaka, it's not necessarily at the right level for us.
Yeah, let's just finish off the United chat with just a simple yes or no answer, guys. Granit Xhaka, Josh, is he in your first 11 Arsenal team at the moment?
I think if he wasn't, it would be a risk, basically, because we don't have a good track record of anyone else. I knew it was going to be a one-word answer. So I will go with no, but I'm struggling to piece together a midfield without him in.
And Dave, what about you? Where do you stand on Xhaka being in your Arsenal first 11?
No, unless he's box to box. Get him away from our box.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll move on to talk about Liège, which is obviously on Thursday. Specifically, we're going to talk about a few of the players who are hopefully going to play in it. We'll start at the back. Rob Holding, who's one who should get some more action. He obviously played against Nottingham Forest, made his comeback, was on the bench at Old Trafford. How good to have him back, Dave. I mean, simply put, it feels, as much as it's going to make a difference to the defence, just in terms of the boost it's given everyone, it feels massive.
Yeah, because he was becoming a very good player before he got injured. Hopefully he's going to continue that development. I have one query about that, though. Most people are saying bring him back alongside David Luiz and get Sokratis out of the way. The problem is both Holding and Luiz are left-sided centre-backs. And so you're going to unbalance the team in a certain way there. So I'm not altogether sure. I suggested at Old Trafford before the game, there might not be a bad idea for Holding to play on the left of Sokratis and Luiz to play instead of Xhaka as a defensive midfielder. Now, he hasn't done that role for a year or two, but when he did it rather well for Chelsea and Brazil, apart from the obvious disaster game against Germany. But that's something I'd be thinking about.
I don't know about you, Dave, I'd also like to see potentially, you know, having Luiz in a back three with Holding, because if you remember that Conte team that won the league in 2016-17, Luiz was in the back three then and he was absolutely fantastic. You think Kieran Tierney playing as a left fullback, Bellerin playing as a right fullback. I think that could be something that could work quite well. What do you think, Dave?
I've gone against us now utilising the back three. I thought Wenger used it in big matches very well indeed. But I think now that we've got three excellent attacking players, to use up an extra player at the back might leave us a little light in midfield. So I would still persist at working at getting that back four together. But yes, probably with a 2-1-3 in front of them, which you couldn't really do with a back three.
Mm. Josh, what about you on Rob Holding? He certainly, judging by the Forest game, and he looked like he was slowly getting towards that player that we saw before we had that horrible injury at Manchester United. You know, he was good on the ball, communicating exceptionally well with the back four. The fact he took the armband as well was an indication of the leader he's coming. I mean, how excited are you to see him back? And also, who would you like to see him sort of paired with? You've heard Dave saying perhaps with Sokratis. Some people have said Callum Chambers, given the two of them have got a good relationship. Who would you like to see Holding with, Josh?
Yeah, I'd agree with Callum Chambers, personally. They've got a huge understanding, and you say a relationship that is even pre-Arsenal. They were a centre-back pairing for England at youth level. So they understand each other on that level. And I think we've also seen they're the kind of like the English Aubameyang and Lacazette when it comes to inseparable. They are absolutely best mates. And it would be great to see them coming in together. I think the worry was, does Chambers have the ability really compared to Holding? And I think after seeing his performance at Forest and generally, I think at United, he had some dodgy times, but if you play him in the centre, he's not going to come up against a lightning quick winger at every opportunity, especially when he's got Hector Bellerin next to him. And for me, that would be the player I'd like to see him come in. The only kind of word of caution was, I think similar to what David said, Holding became almost like the second coming of Maldini whilst he was in the injury room because of the other players that were in the defence at the time. His reputation grew. I think there's a similar thing happening for Mesut Ozil at the moment as well. because he's not there, the reputation is growing because he can't show what he might be doing at that time.
Yeah. Do you think, Dave, that's perhaps part of the reason why Emery's been slowly bringing him in, rather than, I think a lot of fans would have been tempted to just stick him in the back four at Old Trafford and, you know, let Rob Holding go at it?
I would have taken the chance, frankly, given how we've been playing. I would have been proven wrong, because I thought we defended very well in terms of how we've been defending of late. Didn't look absolutely secure, but I thought did a reasonably solid job on a side that lacked confidence. And it does help that Rashford looked like he couldn't hit a cow up the arse with a shovel. So it was, I would have gone with him. I would have been wrong. I would certainly go with him on Thursday. And as you say, why not pair him with Callum Chambers and see if it works?
Mm. What about the fullbacks, Josh? We got to see Kieran Tierney for sort of 70-odd minutes against Nottingham Forest. I think a lot of people were very, very impressed. Going forward, looked fantastic. Very calm at the back as well. And we saw Bellerin for sort of 20 minutes or so, and then he played for the under-23s. What difference do you think they are going to make in terms of how we see Arsenal play, and how much might they adapt to the style of play we've seen under Emery?
Well, hopefully having a reliable left back will help us massively. I've probably mentioned a few times that I don't particularly like Kolasinac as a left back, and especially in the United game as well. I thought he was one of the key arbiters for some of the, especially the goal that they scored. But I think that's one of the big things I'd like to see Tierney come in and do. And then on terms of Bellerin, well, we've seen what kind of gap not having Hector in the side is. We saw it last season. And to be honest, we've seen it in seasons past, that he's just such a good right back for us, not only going forward, but also coming back defensively. You know, there was times when he was linked to Barcelona, or going back to Barcelona, because of his form and how good a player he is. I don't think we can kind of underestimate how important the fullbacks are, in, especially in Unai Emery team. I think the two that are coming through are certainly ones that can really help us build and really get better. I think they're the perfect pair for us, really.
And sensible too, Dave, that Tierney's not going to go as part of the Scotland squad. Not that he's picked up an injury, but simply that Arsenal were managing his minutes rather than, you know, him playing on Thursday in the Europa League and then going away to play two internationals. It seems like the club there and the player both being really sensible and saying, look, play a bit for Arsenal, miss out on the international break and then come back. I mean, that's something I think we've been crying out for sometimes with players, just to be careful rushing them back.
And fair play to Scotland as well, because the situation that they're in at the moment, they need all the Premier League players they can get their hands on. So I hope we don't overuse him on Thursday and lose him for another spell of time, because that will upset them as well. But no, I find Tierney a funny one, because obviously when he first signed, I didn't know a great deal about him. And I know a number of people, a number of Scots, be they different persuasions, Celtic, Dundee, Aberdeen, you were telling me what a player he is. And I'm thinking we're signing a young player who's injury prone. But they're right. Having had a good look at him now, I think we have got ourselves a talent. And I think he can do nothing but strengthen that back four.
Mm. And Josh, in terms of going forward against Liège, what would you like to see there? Would you like to see Mesut Ozil get another game? It does seem we're in a bit of a strange situation where, you know, the Carabao Cup and the Europa League are the chances to play Ozil, but do you think Emery sort of has to use him then simply because he's not part of his Premier League team?
I don't think we should ever be forced into having to play a player. They should always come in to be the good of the side, really. It's not saying that Mesut Ozil isn't a positive for the side, but you can see his negatives. Similarly, the quality of standard Liège, we should be able to afford to have at least one luxury player in the side. I'd imagine that. And Mesut Ozil is one of the best luxury players, really, that we've got in the squad and in world football. So any opportunity to put him to the side, absolutely. There is a kind of worry about, I don't want to go where his head's at, because to be honest, before all of the things that have happened over the summer with him, he's still not really performed on field for us. He's creating a lot of chances, but we're not putting them away. But we did have the golden boot scorer in our midst. We also had Lacazette. It's the first time Mesut has had a forward line as good since he was at Real Madrid, really. And he doesn't seem to be taking advantage, or maybe the strikers aren't taking advantage of it. You know, the strikers are scoring goals, so it's clearly not necessarily their problem or their fault. You know, Aubameyang, he just needs half chances. We saw, Pepe's got an assist this season from it just kind of bouncing off him and coming into the path of Aubameyang to finish. And same for Saka yesterday. You know, you give these strikers even a half chance, they're going to put it away. So it's kind of worrying that we've got a player of this huge quality that isn't racking up the numbers you'd expect.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, where do you stand on the Ozil situation? Do you agree he perhaps needs to be given the opportunities in these games to play, or are you someone who thinks the team and the style of play looks like it's moved on from him by having that set front three of down the line of, you know, Aubameyang, Pepe and Lacazette? Where do you stand on it?
I wish I knew what was going on between him and Emery, why he doesn't make many away trips. Is it anything to do with the attack situation at the start of the season? And without knowing these things, I don't know. In terms of should I think he'd play, you know what, right now I would pick him for one simple reason, and that is that Danny Ceballos, when he played against Burnley, he looked like something we didn't have. And I thought he looked absolutely outstanding. Since the Liverpool game, he's looked like he's a little bit caught in the headlights. And I think if Ozil comes in and produces what he can produce, he's more of a creative player than Danny has become. I have no doubt Ceballos will come good again and Ozil will have another lazy turn. And so it will revert. But on Thursday, I most certainly would start with Mesut.
Yeah, and we'll finish in terms of the Liège looking by having to talk about Martinelli. Josh, he was someone who I think when everyone saw him starting against Forest was pretty excited, because in pre-season there were flashes of brilliance. We heard, you know, a lot of good things from, you know, the club about how they'd found him. Francis Cagio, the same guy who found Cesc Fabregas, pick him out from, you know, a side in the Brazilian fourth division. And for me, he looks like a rough diamond, Josh. He looks like the sort of player who, if he gets moulded right and if he's given time, he could be a real talent. What did you make of him against Forest? And do you think he's the striker to have that Europa League run, just like Eddie had last season?
Yeah, he looks absolutely superb. I think he's got more about him than Nketiah, to be honest, in terms of he's got a bit more creativity about his game. He's not as a pure finisher as Nketiah. And looking at the way that our forwards are now, we need someone that can not only put the ball in the back of the net, but also help out in the build-up of play, putting in assists. And yeah, I really, really like Martinelli in that kind of. I was reading a piece on him. I might have to use a dirty word in front of both of the esteemed journalists in the room and say The Athletic, which I believe there was a piece, autobiographical piece on him, and just how he came through the roots. And it's a really interesting story from him, and he really does look like a huge player. And the fact that, was he on trial at Man United? I think that was one of the points from him. So, yeah, he's clearly got some quality about him, and he looks a really, really promising player, and perhaps someone that, when, unfortunately, Aubameyang has to move on, looks a player in a very similar mould to him.
Yeah, that piece by The Athletic, by Jack Lang, who's a South American expert, you know, fluent Portuguese, Spanish, is a really good read. And if anyone is signed up to The Athletic, thoroughly recommend it. Just learning a bit about Martinelli and the sort of sacrifices he took to get to where he is a very interesting background on him. Dave, in terms of what you thought of him against Forest and the potential you think he has, I mean, we've got excited about strikers in the past, you know, on countless occasions when we've seen first glimpses of them, certainly when they're youngsters. What have you initial impressions of him and what you think he could bring to the team this season?
I'm really not a lot different from Josh, you know. I like his analogy to Eddie Nketiah. They're two different types of player, and he's bringing something to the table that we've not seen from another young player, Saka apart, this season. So, yeah, I absolutely agree. He should get his chance in the Europa League, in the Carabao Cup, and he's there as a ready-made replacement should anything, God forbid, happen to either of the big two up front. So, yeah, thumbs up from me. I like him.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that he's certainly someone we're going to be very excited to see this season and how he develops. We'll go on to a bit of listener questions, or are we doing Fives Forum first?
Should we do listener questions? Because I've got them up ready. Let's do some listener questions. Yes, let's go for those first. Give you a little bit of a break, Simon, as well.
Thank you.
You can catch up on the either the Spurs game or on the Bake Off. Don't do any spoilers for dessert week.
if you haven't seen Lewandowski's equaliser, wait for it.
I've literally just seen it, and it's an absolute rocket.
Yeah.
There's Kimmich scored a good goal as well. It's all going well for those people. But yes, a question from Jonas82 for you, David. It's a difficult one. Would we have won the game with Mesut Ozil in our lineup?
Impossible to answer factually. I happen to believe, yes, there is a possibility. As I mentioned, I would play him ahead of Danny at the moment. That will turn. But I think last night was probably made for Mesut to open teams up.
Thank you very much. One for you, Simon. Which one shall I pick? Let's go for Josh Robinson, who asks, Xhaka has been absolutely fine this season. He and the other players are still adjusting to new tactics. Emery is doing just fine as well, with top four having played Man United, Spurs and Liverpool already. Why so much negativity from the fan base? Do you have anything positive to say about Arsenal? I suppose as the standard reporter on the Arsenal, what is the feeling?
I think that point that he made there about the fact that when you look at the teams that Arsenal have played, the fact that they've played Spurs, Liverpool, Man United are in the top four, I don't think it can be sniffed at. I think it's not necessarily the results that people are, you know, finding issues with. I think it's the performances. And for me personally, again, it comes back to that point of, you know, controlling games and dominating games. I think, you know, that Aston Villa game, you look at it and go, oh, it was a 3-2 win, you know, fantastic performance, but it was a chaotic game. You know, it was crazy, crazy performance that in the end they were bailed out by Aubameyang. The Frankfurt game, on the face of it, it's a 3-0 win away from home in Germany. But again, until, you know, they get those two goals late on, it's a chaotic match. And for me, the issue at the moment, it comes down to that there's a big reliance on Aubameyang getting them out of situations. And I think Dave touched on it where he said, you know, God forbid anything happened to him and Martinelli suddenly leading the line with Lacazette out, then there'd be issues. But for me, I think Emery, given the results he's had, you know, he should be cut a bit more slack. But I think the grievances come from the performances personally. I think that's where the issues come, when from the outside looking in, people who don't see Arsenal play every week, fans who see them play every week, perhaps have issue with performances. But while he gets the results, his position will be fine. So I think that's where it stands at the moment.
Yeah, do you think that's born out of frustration as well, because of the fact that because we're maintaining this position, I've seen there are people now not wishing us to lose, but hoping there was this additional kind of baton that, as you say, the ultimate thing, the results are still going for him.
Yeah, I think the frustration comes because it's the same issues that we've talked about on this podcast for 4 or 5 years, where, you know, it's defensive errors. why is he not playing a set holding midfielder? You know, if you'd rewinded back to when this podcast started, you know, years ago when Danny started out with the others, they'd have said the same things. They'd have moaned about the same things. I think that's what frustrates people. But when you get away with it, when you've got a Aubameyang curling in free kicks in the last 4 or 5 minutes, when you're getting results, then your job's going to be okay, isn't it? But the point would you would think would be that the performances will eventually catch up with you, unless you can address the issues that we talk about on here, you know, every week, every year.
Yeah. So, David, I'll come to you with another question. And thanks for that, Simon. This one is from Mike Nagendran. So in your experience, David, how long should we wait for Pepe to hit his stride? The ultimate question, really, I think.
Certainly give him a season for me, in order to acclimatise, in order to get the language sorted out. And then next season, we'll be looking for a return. Anything before that, I think, is a bonus. As you say, we look at the players like Perez, like Henry, like Bergkamp. There have been others down the years. Peter Marinello, if you go back to the 1970s. Players who haven't hit the ground running. Unfortunately, Peter Marinello never really did. But, you've got to stick with it. You know the guy's got class. You know the guy's got talent. We haven't paid 80 million euros for nothing, and it would be a shame to waste that investment by jettisoning him too early. But thanks for the question, Mike.
Thank you as well for your answer, David. I think, yeah, kind of agree that we didn't pay 80 million for a single season, did we? We gave him a 5-year deal for one reason. We expect him in 5 years to be firing on all cylinders for us. Simon, a question for you, and I think it's particularly pertinent because as you were used to follow or still follow Watford in kind of a journalistic point of view. Question from Loki73. This is a system that they kind of employed for a while. What is wrong with an old style 4-4-2? With two DMs, two wingers, and two up front.
Yeah, I mean, well, I remember, Dave might have remembered it, or, you know, from a few, it might have been, trying to think how many it was, 2-3 years ago at an AGM. One of the questions put to Wenger from the floor that, you know, people got to send their questions was, why don't we play 4-4-2 anymore? And that was, you know, a general question. I think when you watch the way that Watford did it, it was more of a sort of almost like a 4-2-2-2, in the sense that the two players you had in that role were very sort of defensive minded. Kapu in particular, Decore had a bit more license to go forward, and the two players out wide, Pereira and Hughes, you know, had license to go forward. But Will Hughes is someone who himself will admit, you know, started out as a flair player, but is now someone who works incredibly hard. So to do it, it's more than possible and it's achievable, but you need to have players that are going to, you know, work exceptionally hard without the ball, I think, going back. And I would perhaps wonder if we were playing a sort of, you know, for two players sitting, and if your two wingers were sort of Pepe and Aubameyang, and you had Lacazette and another centre forward with him up there, or if Aubameyang was playing up there and Saka on the left, I would perhaps be slightly concerned that those four wouldn't do enough going back. As to oppose when you have just even just that one extra man in midfield, whether it's Ceballos playing with Xhaka and Guendouzi or Torreira, I think it just gives you a bit more solidity, and it's why teams often go for that. But it can be done. You just need those sort of wide players and the two players midfield to be pretty defensively minded.
Yeah, we don't really have a Decore or a Kapu
in
the squad to really fulfil those positions. David, come back to you on another question, if I can remember where I am on my place. Question from Archie. Why does Emery seem to select a better balance in the cup games and Europa than in the league?
It would appear that way. I think Archie's swayed probably by the Forest performance, where you have a number of youngsters keen to impress, a couple of players coming back keen to impress, against a Forest side who looked very different from the one that beat us in the FA Cup a couple of years ago. I thought they were a pretty poor side. But yes, there are performances that we produce. Last year in the Europa League, when you're talking about the quality of teams that we beat in the quarterfinal and the semi-final, when we do seem to let ourselves loose. But I don't know how much of that is down to the players saying, right, this is an opportunity for us. Let's go do it and forget what he's told us. Much as perhaps has happened with this playing out from the back of late. We didn't do it as much last night. Whether that was under instruction or not, I don't know. But it's one consideration, I think. But good question, Archie. Thank you.
Yeah, something is kind of similar to that in terms of the players and the style. Question from Gunner93. I'm going to go to you, Si, for this. Why does Emery appear to be copying Sarri's approach that he had with Kante, with Torreira, even though doing that with Kante ultimately got him the sack at Chelsea last season?
Yes, it's an interesting one. I mean, I thought Dave was really good when he was talking about Torreira earlier, because I, like everyone else, was so impressed. Firstly, when I saw him in the World Cup playing for Uruguay, and I think we all remember that famous clip where, you know, he was diving to try and head the ball when it was, you know, sort of 2 inches off the ground. But just the way he sat in front of that Uruguayan defence and just mopped up everything. And I remember in the first sort of 3 or 4 months when he was playing last season, that he was fantastic in the North London Derby and just doing that role. I mean, whether it's something that Emery's seen him, that he thinks he can get, you know, more from him because of his dynamism. He's obviously got the legs to do that box-to-box ability. But there's no denying that. He's probably one of the fittest players in the squad. I just, like Dave, don't think he's going to offer enough in that box that makes you think, okay, he's a genuine threat to do that. Perhaps it's something to do with Aaron Ramsey not being there, you know, who was a fantastic at that. But for me, if you want a box-to-box player in the Arsenal squad, you just need to look at Joe Willock, because I think he's fantastic at doing that. And he's someone who's developing into, you know, who can get goals from midfield. With comparing to the Kante situation, I mean, I saw Chelsea for the first time on Saturday, and actually watching them, you do see how much they have Jorginho sitting deep, and it's almost difficult to have Kante next to him because so much of the play is going through him. And people watching Chelsea earlier on this season were saying, you know, Lampard hasn't actually done much different to what Sarri was doing. You know, Kante's doing a similar role where he's going forward. That, you know, you saw his goal against Liverpool. So I think that was a case for Sarri where it was a stick to beat him with. Look, Kante's playing out of position. Let's get it wrong. And in reality, Lampard's doing very similar, where Jorginho's sitting deep, the play's revolving around him, and Kante's, you know, still being box to box. So I don't know if much has changed at Chelsea, but for Arsenal, I'm in the camp where I would like to see Torreira being that holding player.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one as well. The team we saw in the Uruguay side that he plays in that kind of diamond, I think we're slowly getting there with the players that he was used to being with. It was Nate Nandez and Bentancur, who are pretty... Oh my God, sorry. I've just seen Gnabry has got his second.
Yeah. Blimey. Surely they can't win 5-1 in North London. That would be an appalling result.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. So, yeah, I kind of forgot where I was. Anyway, we'll move on from that one and on to final question before we go back to Fife's forum with you, Simon. One for David. It's from Philip Bevan. If we're in fourth come January with an easy-looking route in the Europa League, but performances are still poor, should we pull the trigger early on Emery if a suitable manager is available?
I think I kind of answered this earlier. If Guardiola's available, then I think you think about it. I think if we're talking Allegri, we're talking about another safety-first coach. If we're talking about, for an example, an Arteta, unproven. No, if we've got a top four space already, then I would rather hold on to Emery and look to plug any gaps in the squad if there's any money left in January. If not, I understand why, but I would stick with him. But thank you for the question, Philip.
Yeah, back to you, Simon, for Fife's Forum, I believe. And thank you to the listeners for all your questions, as always. It's great to get them in.
Yes, thank you guys for all those. So the Fife's Forum question this week was, sadly, some of the fan base want Emery out. So what percentage out are you? So Jonas, 82. I'm about 80% now. He has no idea how to play to our strength. He doesn't have the balls to take the risks that I need in the Premier League. Loki, 73. I'm 76.9% Emery out. Archie, I was 100% Emery out versus Watford. Say Anvish, I hope I pronounced that right. I probably dannied it. I'm 69% Emery out. Mayank, 25%, about that much of the season is done and he's failed these tests. And Carl Walker has very helpfully put, I'm 100% Carpenter out. We'll just finish quickly. What are you guys in response to that fast forum, Josh and Dave?
In terms of like percentage, I'm not sure he should take us into next season. But in terms of for this season, I'd just keep him. I'm not on board with give it to Ljungberg till the end of the season mob quite yet. I think that's too early for that kind of stuff, that kind of talk. But yeah, for the moment, let's just keep calm. And I think, until it gets really bad, I think we should be okay. And I'm sure the board are doing what they feel like they'll be doing now, nice and early, as we kind of come into this new reign of, being a bit more proactive, not only in the market, but I think in terms of next manager and succession planning.
I did like the answer that said like 25%, because that's how far we are through the season. And he has that big chunk of time to get it right still before we come to that 2-year break. So that will do for me.
Nice one. We'll just finish with some gentlemen's nods, guys. If you've got one lined up, Josh, other than a contestant on the Bake Off, that'd be very good.
Oh, yeah, I haven't even learned their names yet. I don't want to get too attached to them. But in terms of gentleman's nod, I think it only makes sense that we're going to Ellis Mel at this moment in time with him. It's just big up to Ellis. And we're all thinking of you at ABW.
Yeah, very well said, Josh. Nicely done. Dave, your gentleman's nod for this week, please.
I don't think I could do anything different than that. I think we're all feeling for Ellis. Some of us have been there. And if he needs any help, he knows where I am. But good luck, mate. You're going to need it over the next few days.
Yeah, and I think it's only right to make it a hat trick, to be fair. I think all of us in that podcast WhatsApp group and in the group know how it's much more than a podcast. You know, it's a friendship group that is there for everyone and people who listen to the podcast. And I think one of the greatest things about this podcast is how we've had people reach out to us, to Jace or to others, just to DM them, just to talk. And that for me is the best thing about it and why it's such a powerful tool. And I think I speak for everyone saying, you know, we're all thinking of you, Ellis, and we're all here for you. To finish, we'll just look at some upcoming shows. We'll have a preview show before the Liège game. We'll obviously then be live after the match. And then, of course, rolls on to the weekend. Another preview show, another live after the game. And then the international break, unfortunately. I'm sure we'll do something during then. Even rumours of a potential after dark. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Danny may have more on that. But I think that brings us to a close for this week, gents. So that all that leaves me to say is thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you very much for having me on.
That's no problem. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you, Simon. Good tight show. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, no. And thank you guys for listening, for all your comments, all your feedback. It will be taken and processed. I can promise you that. This was a Bergkamp Wonderland. Thanks for listening.
Danny, turn this shit off.
As soon as I scored that goal, I was fucking livid. Splendid business.